I'm Roland,
and I've been doing this, let's see, since 1972. And I was like 18, 17 then 18. Yeah. Something like that. That's when I started. Doesn't mean I know a lot. Yeah. It just means that I know that I don't know a lot.
Was that here? It wasn't here in Colorado.
No, I started. I actually started in California when I was in college, and then met my teacher, the founder of Shambhala, Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, in Vermont, Karma Cholin. That's where I met him.
My name's Tim. I've been involved with the group here for about, I guess it's been almost 7 years now, involved with Shambhala about the same amount of time. So happy to be here.
My name is Margo Hedrick. It's been about a year and a half and walked here with the Shambhala. Before that, I was doing transcendental meditation for a while. And I'm finding this to be, for me, right practice, right time. Really good. My name is Carol. I've been involved with Shambhala meditation for about 10 years, and I guess I started attending the Lama group maybe 7 years ago. And very happy to be in the meditation group.
Hi, I'm Susan, and I've been involved in Shambhala meditation and study for 3 years, I think. And I just completed my Rigdon weekend, which is, I don't know, a capstone of the first 5 levels of Shambhala training you can do. And I think I've been coming here on and off, more off than on, for about a year, I guess.
And I'm Deborah, and I'm new to the group. And I've been meditating for years, but I don't know anything about Shambhala. I met Carol and Jacqueline late on Tuesday night. It was on the, and I'm just trying to find kind of where I can.
I'm Eric, and I've been involved with Shambhala since sometime in the late 90s. I'm not sure when I really kicked in. It has immeasurably enriched my life, and I think I've been able to, in my own limited way, be of some help to people too, by some of the things I picked up here.
I'm Richard, and I've been involved about 5 years, and it's amazing what meditation can change your mind, and it's a golden opportunity for everyone.
My name's Michael, and what he said. But I've also, I've actually meditated with Muktananda's groups for many years. It's a whole different kind of meditation. But I've had spontaneous and wonderful interactions with the Shambhala community for a couple decades by way of working with the Great Stupa, doing work on MSC, Naropa University, and just met Allen Ginsberg once. It's a wonderful community.
Thank you. I'm Jacqueline. First probably got introduced to Shambhala 10, 11 years ago, somewhere around there. Did very good with my practice. Kind of got it out of sync and trying to get back on track again. And just second night being in this group. So the first time was 2 weeks ago. Unfortunately, health prevented last week. I was very bummed. Glad to be back, though, and I feel very, very blessed.
I'm Bill. I'm the coordinator of this group. I've been involved for 26 years. I'm very happy to be here.
Great. So what I'd like to present tonight is called contemplative meditation practice. And it's interesting because this word contemplative means different things in different traditions, just like the word meditation does. In fact, in the Christian tradition, contemplation is what they call meditation. And so it can be very confusing. But for us, contemplation means that there's an object that, like some kind of, usually we use a phrase from the Dharma, a phrase from the teachings, as the object of our contemplation. And so what we're actually doing here is including our intellect, which is so important in meditation practice. A lot of times we think when we start that it's just about sitting. And we get that impression sometimes from what people say that, you know, sitting is the key. And of course, it is the key. But without having the eyes, the wisdom, the understanding of what you're doing, meditation can become what they say, wandering in the plains without having the view, the proper understanding or view of what we're doing. So therefore, it's actually very important to include our intellect in this practice. And there's many ways of doing that. But the main way is studying the teachings of people who actually have experienced, we could say, reality or complete a freedom from confusion. And so when we read what those people say, they're speaking from a place that, and using words that are not habitual. They're not using words that provoke habitual thinking. They're using words that actually provoke us to look into our experience. And this is a totally different thing. So the Dharma is all about actually looking into, investigating what's really going on here. And so by studying the Dharma, we call it the Dharma, which just simply means, the word Dharma means many things. It means truth, or it can just mean a thing, like a Dharma is a phenomena. It can also mean, like Chögyam Trungpa said in India, in the back of vitamin, a bottle of vitamins, it'll say Dharma, and it'll list what's in it. So Dharma has lots of meanings. Here we're talking about what we call the Buddha Dharma, the Dharma, the truth as discovered by an enlightened human being. And of course, one of the things that distinguishes Buddhism from many other traditions is that what the Buddha said is that you really have to liberate yourself. We're not here to have someone save us, but we're here to follow the example of someone who saved himself or herself. And there have been many people since the Buddha who've completely liberated themselves from confusion. Not just the Buddha. So what we're doing is we're following a tradition of practice and study and contemplation, meditation, and action. So we don't just do it in here, we do it in our whole lives. And that includes our minds, includes our hearts, includes our relationships, everything is included. So what we're learning tonight is really a way to really start to use our minds as an aid towards waking up. Because our minds, our intellects, often just perpetuate our habitual thinking. They, you know, our minds usually are filled with thoughts about ourselves, our lives, what we want, what we don't want, and how we get it, how we avoid it. You know, we have all of these things going on in our mind. But if we start to study the Dharma, if we really study it, we start to have, you know, sort of dharmic gossip in our minds. And dharmic gossip is quite different. Dharmic gossip is telling us about looking into things, being with, staying with it as it is, don't try to change anything. You know, it's giving us instructions about how to live our lives in an awake way. So it's very helpful to fill your mind with Dharma. And then, you know, you're going through your day and things pop up in your mind and they actually bring you back. They kind of wake you up. So that's why, that's a general sort of sense of why do we study? We study so that we can, study is also like a roadmap of the path that we're taking, the journey that we're taking as meditators. You know, it's important to understand what's true north, what is the actual direction that we want to head in here with what we're doing. You know, we're not, in other words, what wouldn't be true north is to try to just feel bliss. You know, that would not be, that would be missing truth. That's something like South by Southwest. You know, that's a whole different direction. So we need to actually know what is true north. And how do we know that? Well, it rings true to us. That's why we're here. When we hear it, it rings true. And we then, you know, get inspired, and we also get kind of gapped. There's a sense of a little bit of gap in our minds. In other words, what we start to do is we start to see that a lot of the ways that we keep things stuck and confused is that we ourselves are perpetuating that confusion. That's why the confusion continues. So we're actually learning, rather than perpetuate it, to start clear thinking, thinking clearly about how to wake up and how to stop perpetuating our confusion. So it's very simple, really. The Dharma is totally practical. It's not about, you know, beliefs in other realities or anything like that. It's just pointing towards, just stay with this. Just do this. So practical. And then if we do that, we start to see that that it's actually provoking our own wisdom. That we're starting to understand what the path is. At some point you actually start to understand, what does it mean by the path? In other words, we feel like we're moving forward. And even when we have problems, big problems in our lives, those problems can be ways of further waking up, rather than being something that just totally drags us down. And so this is what it means to be on a path, that we learn to utilize everything in our lives as a way of moving forward and waking up further, rather than it becoming something that just derails us. So the idea of this is that as we're studying the Dharma, and that could be, you know, hopefully written by someone who understands us, that helps a lot. In other words, if you read something purely written for someone, you know, 1,000 years ago, well, it's not that it isn't any good. It's just that sometimes there's a translation issue oftentimes. So we're very fortunate to have contemporary teachers who've worked with us and have developed the language of the Dharma in a way that really can be understood in a very practical way for people now, for the way that we think now. So this is very wonderful and very fortunate. It's like if you have, you know, an ancient recipe for making bread, and it talks about the ovens, and we don't have any idea what they're talking about. What's that oven? That's not what I have. And then they talk about, you know, the flour, and it should be this fine. And you go, well, and they say it should be as fine as, and then they give you an example of something, you have no idea what that is. And then they say, you know, and they start using terms that really, you don't know what they mean. So this is what I mean by bringing things to the current situation, that we understand the proper temperature, what that means. We understand what the ingredients are. And then we can actually bake the bread ourselves. So we have become Western practitioners, full-blown, the real thing. We really do practice the true tradition, and we have interpreted it through great realized beings, have sort of used their experience to bring it to us in a way that we can understand it. And so that's the kind of book I have in my hand. It's a book by someone who really understands Westerners, and here's another one by someone who actually grew up largely in the West. I mean, he was born in Nepal, I think, but went to Western schools. And so this is Chögyam Trungpa. This is a great book. This is this is a book, 365 teachings. So each page has like a paragraph on it. And so you can, every day, you know, turn the page and go, okay, what's today's thing? And that's fun. And so I find this very useful. Also, it's useful for getting quotes for things, like tonight, for a succinct, you know, pithy thing for tonight. This is really good. This book is by this man's son, Sakyong Mipam Rinpoche, who is our current lineage holder. And this book is his latest book, the most recent book. And it's really a remarkable kind of journey reading this book. So it takes you on a journey of his relationship with his father and what he learned and how he applied that in his life. And so it becomes like an example. And also teaching about really the Shambhala principle itself, which is basic goodness. Really teaching about basic goodness. So I'm going to draw mostly from these two books and maybe a little bit from this book. So as we're going along studying or reading the Dharma, we suddenly come across something, we go, I have no idea what that means. No idea whatsoever. And that's one of the times that we utilize this technique called contemplating the teachings, when we don't get it. It's one of the main times that we use this. And let me tell you what the technique is. We begin by, we're reading along, maybe we have a paragraph that we really kind of want to understand more deeply. So we start by just reading it over and over again. And maybe we get to the sort of central sentence that kind of is the sentence that kind of encapsulates that paragraph that we don't quite understand fully. And we just read it. We read it in the context of the paragraph. Maybe we have to go back a page to understand the context of it. But we just keep staying with it, reading it over and over again. So that's called, we focus our mind on the words. That's called the words. Okay? We're not trying to understand it. We just read the words over and over again without trying to figure it out. That's the first step of contemplating. And then the second step is we begin to say, okay, what does this mean? So then we start to kind of just let our mind go and sort of look for parallels, like go into, what are they called? Tangents, and see what is my experience, and my experience connects with this, connects me with this. And just let it go. Let yourself make all kinds of connections. That's the second part of contemplating. That's called beginning to look for the meaning of the words. And then, once you've, so you're saying the words over and over, but now you're kind of saying them, kind of looking, what does this mean to me? What is this? Is it this? Is it that? And you kind of chew on it. And then, once you start to feel a sense of what it might mean, the third part of contemplating is you then stay with the meaning and you don't focus so much on the words. Okay? So the first part is the words. The second part is the words and the meaning. The third part is just the meaning. So that means you just stay with the feeling of what you just understood and what it might evoke for you. And then the last part is you go back to actual meditation and meditate in the atmosphere of that understanding. So you don't try to hold on to it, you just let it be there. And you meditate in that atmosphere of it. Okay? So that's basic instruction in contemplation practice. So let's start with this one. Success and failure. Trust is being willing to take a chance, knowing that what goes up must come down, as they say. When a warrior, by the way, the term warrior here is referring to one who is brave. So we consider the practice of meditation to be the practice of enlightened warriorship, because we're willing to face the unknown, face our fear, face whatever arises. When a warrior has that kind of trust in the reflections of the phenomenal world, then she can trust her individual discovery of goodness. Communication produces results, either success or failure. That is how the fearless warrior relates with the universe, not by remaining alone and insecure, hiding away, but by constantly being exposed to the phenomenal world and constantly being willing to take that chance. The ancient Chinese book of changes, the I Ching, often talks about success becoming failure and failure being success. Success sows the seeds of future failure, and failure may bring a later success. So it's always a dynamic process. As warriors, fearlessness doesn't mean that we cheer up by saying, look, I'm on the side of the right, I'm a success. Nor do we feel that we're being punished when we fail. In either case, success and failure are saying the same thing. Okay, so you go, what? What did that mean? You might react that way. And so then you might go back and read that second paragraph. The ancient Chinese book of changes, or I Ching, often talks about success being failure and failure being success. Success sows the seeds of future failure, and failure may bring later success. I mean, that's right there, a very confused, potentially confusing line. Success sows the seed of future failure. Failure sows the seeds of future success. So it's always a dynamic process. As warriors, fearlessness doesn't mean that we cheer up by saying, look, I'm on the side of the right, I'm a success. Nor do we feel that we're being punished when we fail. Either case, success and failure are saying the same thing. So one would read that over and over, and at some point you would just read the words. Don't try to understand, just read the words over and over. And then you would pick one sentence, and I'll pick this one, the last sentence. Nor do we feel that we're being punished when... In either case, success and failure are saying the same thing. Okay. So that's a pretty provocative sentence. So we'll stick with that one. Success. We could even shorten it to say, success and failure are saying the same thing. Wow. Okay. So we'll just begin with just the words. Success and failure are saying the same thing. And you just say those words. It's like meditation. Instead of coming back to the breathing, you just come back to those words. Success and failure are saying the same thing. So let's just do that for a minute. Part of this is you see what it provokes in you. That's part of this. Just say the words, see what it provokes. Part two. Now begin to actually try to see, what does this mean to me? Find meaning in it by bringing it to your experience, whatever pops up in your mind. Maybe it provokes something. Go there and think about it. So then you drop the words and just stay with the feeling that has been evoked through having contemplated it. The meaning. Then let go of even that. Just let it be there and return to meditation practice. Okay, so let's briefly just see, any questions about that process? Any comments or whatever?
Well, success, it's just an experience that we have and we label it. And failure is another experience and we label it. So the important thing then is to learn from each experience.
Okay. So that was the meaning that you culled from that.
The meaning, yeah.
For you, that you culled from that. That came out of that for you. That was the meaning that it provoked for you.
You mean what, how did I feel about it?
No, that's what it meant from your point of view. That's your understanding of what that means.
Yes. Yes.
And but in the process of contemplating, that's what it kind of provoked for you.
Yes.
It might provoke something different tomorrow. When you go, I really don't want this such and such to fail.
Well, I don't know the difference in between the two. Really,
no, I'm just saying, you know,
yeah.
When we're very invested in something going right, what you just said might or might not come to your mind.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that.
Yeah, I can speak yeah. to that yeah. because I'm very invested in this talk that I'm giving on Sunday. Mm-hmm. I'm giving a talk for the first time in a new church. Has asked me to give the sermon. And so this is very timely for me. I'm very attached. So the feeling of contemplating this was kind of like that. It was just like, go away, you know, of recognizing just how invested I am. Yeah, yeah. And working, you know.
Anyone else?
Of course. Yeah. From what you said, I was expecting it to be kind of like cognitive, you know, really mental.
Uh-huh.
But what happened to me was I was swept with emotion.
Oh, wow.
You know, yeah. And specifically a kind of wave of sadness.
Uh-huh.
And it was kind of hard, you know. Kind of along the lines of how much time and energy I wasted fussing about
successful.
But I mean, just, that's kind of still cognitive. It was just below that. I was really feeling.
Yeah.
In fact, I felt before I got to, you know, they switched for me, I guess, the order, the steps. So I don't know if that happened to you, but the feeling hit me pretty early. And then, but you were giving us the directions, and it's very interesting.
I actually had a sense of relaxation, and a sense of freedom. I mean, there's no, they're one and the same, so it takes pressure off of having to have it good, having to have it bad. You know, there's no outcome, there's nothing. I mean, if you look at it that way, then there's nothing to fear, there's no anxiety, there's none of that stuff, because it's all the same anyway. I know it's not that simple, because believe me, things don't go my way, but I want them to. I get bummed, you know, I'm right. Human. But that's what sparked for me, was just this sense, automatic sense of, the first thing that it hit was, well, of course. I mean, it was just, my mind just instantly thought, well, yeah, of course it's that way. You know, and then it just went to relaxation. So, anyway.
So, whenever I do something like this and I come upon a truth, I have that there as sort of like a guide, like north, like pointed towards north. But I've also found that sometimes it's good to keep things fresh, like to not get locked into an ideology, or to just come back to the safety and to keep it, you know, keep shaking it up a little bit. And I guess life actually does that for us anyway. It will give us the things that shake up our experiences to bring us new realizations.
So how do you? What are you referring to in terms of the what we just did?
With taking something that I've read, and then contemplating that, and then letting that kind of run through until I come up with some sort of a truth from that. That sort of becomes like a guiding sort of a thing, you know.
Okay.
But the trick for me is to not let things become, like you said, you want teaching should be fresh and not lead to automatic thinking. Because even if it's a truth and it leads to automatic thinking, it's doing a disservice to its awareness and cultivation.
Exactly. Well, one of the things, like for instance, you know, a dharmic statement like be kind to others. If you really contemplate something like that, it usually provokes in you, why should I? There are people I don't like. I mean, it provokes the opposite sometimes. And sometimes people feel guilty about that. They think, oh, I'm a bad person because I can't feel the be kind. But actually, that's the whole point, is that you actually get to see, you know, is this true? Is it true that it actually, is it really true? So that's what we call, you know, testing the gold. You know, the Buddha said you should always test for yourself whether it's true or not. And this is the process we're going through here. So sometimes it can provoke very difficult feelings, and, you know, painful feelings sometimes, and sometimes it puts us through something just working with that idea. And that's the whole point here, is to actually, that the truth actually penetrates through to all of our resistance to that, and we have to work with the resistance. That's part of it.
Truth is living. I mean, truth is living. Mm-hmm. It's not something that's stale. It's just,
Yeah, like I said, and like you said, you know, maybe intellectually we go like I did. I immediately went through an intellectual thing where I went, well, yeah, failure is temporary and impermanent, and so is success. They're both impermanent and temporary. So you can't hold on to either one. And if you do, it creates suffering. So that's pointless. So I kind of went through this whole logical thing. But then the truth is, when something fails, I really get pissed. So even though I know this, so this is what we're doing here, is we're really looking into, well, is it enough just to know that? And really getting into it, and really mixing it with our experience. And that's where the rubber meets the road, is mixing it with our experience, our lives. That's a very important way to do this. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a starting point and not a conclusion.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's continually evolving. Yeah. Everything's going forward.
Yeah. Did you have something, Bill, to add?
Well, a different take. That the actual practice of contemplation reminds me of graduate school, where you just study and study and words.
Yeah.
And then at some point you sort of drop it, maybe because you have to go to sleep. And then sometime later, totally unpredictable, something comes up.
Yeah.
You know, so it's the same thing, or very similar anyway. Yeah. So you push real hard, and then you let it go, and then something happens.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's great. Let's try another one. It's called Discovering Totality. Becoming more clearly aware of emotions and life situations and the space in which they occur might open us up to a still more panoramic awareness. A compassionate attitude, a warmth, develops at this point. It is an attitude of fundamental acceptance of oneself while still retaining critical intelligence. We appreciate the joyful aspect of life along with the painful aspect. Relating to emotions ceases to be a big deal. Emotions are as they are, neither suppressed nor indulged, but simply acknowledged. So the precise awareness of details leads into an openness to the complex totality of situations. What?
Okay, let's
read it again, the whole thing. Becoming more clearly aware of emotions and life situations and the space in which they occur might open us up to a still more panoramic awareness. A compassionate attitude, a warmth, develops at this point. It is an attitude of fundamental acceptance of oneself while still retaining critical intelligence. We appreciate the joyful aspect of life along with the painful aspect. Relating to emotions ceases to be a big deal. Emotions are as they are, neither suppressed nor indulged, but simply acknowledged, so that the precise awareness of details leads into an openness to the complex totality of situations. Okay, so I'm going to just take this last two sentences. Emotions are as they are, neither suppressed nor indulged, but simply acknowledged. So the precise awareness of details leads into an openness to the complex totality of situations. Maybe that's not the best thing. Hold on.
What's the thing about the self-acceptance and the critical...
Okay.
Yeah.
A compassionate attitude, a warmth develops at this point. It is an attitude of fundamental acceptance of oneself while still retaining critical intelligence. We appreciate the joyful aspect of life along with the painful aspect. So let's take that much. A compassionate attitude, a warmth develops at this point. It is an attitude of fundamental acceptance of oneself while still retaining critical intelligence. We appreciate the joyful aspect of life along with the painful aspect. This is a lot like the other one. We appreciate the joyful aspect of life along with the painful aspect. It's all very similar. In fact, there's something called the eight worldly dharmas: pain and pleasure, success and failure,
fame
and disgrace, and I can't remember which. What's that?
I was going to say love and hate.
No, there's gain and loss and gain.
Yeah.
Loss and gain, pleasure and pain, fame and disgrace, and pleasure and pain. Yeah. And so, those are the extremes that we experience. So this is one of those. We appreciate the joyful aspect of life along with the painful aspect. Relating to emotions ceases to be a big deal. Should we take that as a contemplation?
it's interesting. I'll bet for everybody here, there's part of that that sure. really is the thing that you
it's true.
Go right for.
No, you're absolutely right. Different things would speak to you as the thing that you really kind of don't quite get and maybe need to stick with. Let's do the whole thing one more time. Becoming more clearly aware of emotions and life situations and the space in which they occur might open us up to a still more panoramic awareness. A compassionate attitude of warmth develops at this point. It is an attitude of fundamental acceptance of oneself while still retaining critical intelligence. We appreciate the joyful aspect of life along with the painful aspect. Relating to emotions ceases to be a big deal. Emotions are as they are, neither suppressed nor indulged, but simply acknowledged. So the precise awareness of details leads into an openness to the complex totality of situations. So the precise awareness of details leads into an openness to the complex totality of situations. It's hard to find the right thing there for everyone.
I found mine to contemplate.
Which is yours?
It's the fundamental acceptance of oneself while still retaining critical intelligence.
A compassionate attitude, a warmth develops at this point, is an attitude of fundamental acceptance of oneself while still retaining critical intelligence.
Founded, but
okay, let's do that one. Let's all take that one. That's a good one. An attitude of fundamental acceptance of oneself while still retaining critical intelligence. It is an attitude of fundamental acceptance of oneself while still retaining critical intelligence. So just stay with the words at first. An attitude of fundamental acceptance of oneself while still retaining critical intelligence. An attitude of fundamental acceptance of oneself while still retaining critical intelligence. Go to part two, trying to understand what does that mean to me, to you. An attitude of fundamental acceptance of oneself while still retaining critical intelligence. Some sense of what that means. And now stay with that sense of what it means. let it just dissolve into meditation practice informed by that understanding. So you don't need to hold on to anything, just go back to practice in that environment. We have time for a few comments. Do you have any?
That's a big one. Yeah. But you know what I did start to have an insight of was instead of seeing the word self with a small s, self with a big s, I forget what the line is even because my mind has kind of like turned it into its own thing, but compassion with fundamental acceptance of oneself while still retaining critical intelligence. Because the first thing going on, does that mean that we can't exist with just being able to accept ourselves and have intelligence be in the same space? I mean, I'm really grasping with this. I'm going to go home and take this one with me for a long time. But I see it now as more of being in embodying self in terms of awareness, which means being empty, which means being open and spacious while still having intelligence there residing in the same space.
Of course, there's no right answer here.
No, I know.
You've culled from it, and that's a process that you work with.
Yeah.
But it is important to, like, when I am going to teach something, you know, if I don't get it, I'll go back to the paragraph before, the page before, and just keep going until I have a sense of what is the context, what does he mean, and finally, usually, there'll be some aha.
Yeah.
Now I understand what he means.
But it will change. It's like tomorrow, it'll be like, oh, but also.
Oh, totally.
And so forth.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
I guess for me, it was kind of an interesting contrast as this sense of humor kind of came up. Because I think the thing that kind of stuck with me is, I guess that means I know I'm an idiot, but it's okay. You know, that being able to see a little more clearly, but you know, sort of riding with it. You know, and I'm sure that'll change tomorrow, but it was a little more of a sense of humor than that sense of sadness.
Yeah.
What it brought up for me is something I realized fairly recently is that we go to the movies and we pay money to watch movies. You know, comedies and dramas and all these things. We have a great time. Well, they have it in our life. Some things we really like and some things we really don't like. And it's so different from being at the movies. And this is sort of like saying, treat it sort of like a movie. You know? It's kind of weird.
When I keep forgetting things and it's hard for me to accept myself when I forget my billfold and then I forget my cell phone and have to keep going back. And so I get kind of mad at myself and I have to slow down so that I can remember these things.
For me, it really provoked that when there's enough spaciousness, which means you're not filling the space with your agendas, that kind of critical intelligence and acceptance arise together. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of an innate. That's what that kind of was saying to me. Now that's not that's what happens to me all the time, but that's my understanding of what that's saying. And so then you have to connect that with, well, do I do that? You know, am I actually practicing that?
Lucky, this situation in real life will come up to allow you to test that, to allow you to experience that.
Well, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the beauty of doing this, is that you're actually learning about reality. and about your experience of reality, and it carries into your life, and it'll provoke what you did here. Yeah. You know, it's very interesting that way.
Maybe it's not even so much of a lucky as it is that it's always happening. Yeah. It's whether or not we're aware.
Uh-huh. I agree with that. I always say I'll learn to the day I die. If you have ears, eyes, and an open mind, there's always something to be learned. It was something my mom taught me as a little girl. You know, just there's something to be learned in not only bad situations that sadden you, but in the good situations.
Weren't you lucky? You had a mother who understood that.
Yes, yes.
That's a great one.
Yeah, yeah. So I definitely, that's one thing I've held with me my whole life. I felt very strongly about it.
It's wonderful.
So that can be rephrased. If I'm lucky, my ears and my eyes will be open. And that's semantics. That's where language is so important. Instead of saying if you're lucky, right, as opposed to if I'm lucky. Because I can only speak from my experience.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it's actually 9:02.
Oh. Let's see. We have announcements. What's the point? Oh, this Saturday is our art walk. So we're going to be on 4th Avenue, just east of Main. No, just west of Main. So that's it. And then Sunday is June 1st. So we're going to be here from 9 to noon on Sunday. Those are the two big events. And the next Thursday, you're going to have a Dharma talk next Thursday?
Yes, we are. Walter Taylor is going to be here.
Oh, maybe I'll be here.
Wouldn't that be great?
Well, the finally fourth or fifth time he's here, and I'll finally be here. Okay. At least from what I know right now. Yeah.
And Saturday is also the farmer's market.
Oh, yeah. You're going to sing? Mm-hmm. All right.
Oh, are you talking about the one here in Longmont?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great.
Boulder County.
Great.
Well, the two guys, Thomas and James, will start, I think, at 9-ish, but I'm going to show up at about 11:30.
Cool.
Then finish up by morning.
What do you sing?
It's a trio, a couple of guitars and flute and vocals. I call it folk jazz. Yeah, it is fun. And the farmer's market has all the food vendors.
I know. Oh, yeah. I know. That's European baker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Closest you can get to European bread here.
Any other announcements? Thank you all for coming. Thank you very much, Roland.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Yeah. It was great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
It was a great conversation.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. Awesome.